Subway Everyday Value means many mouth-watering pile-high favorites are $5 footlongs, like the fresh-toasted tempting meatball marinara and made-to-your-order BLT. The $5 footlong anthem rolls on only at Subway, where great everyday value lives. Subway, eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Against my better judgment, we're going to have this next guy on. I have a habit of jinxing athletes with the BS Report. Hopefully we're going to break it right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. From the Phoenix Suns, my favorite player who's not a Celtic in the NBA other than Kevin Durant and any Celtic, Jared Dudley. What's happening?
What's going on?
Are you ready? You're not nervous, right?
No, I'm a little nervous because I'm hearing it's the number one podcast, so I got to bring my best information to this show.
This is big. We're introducing you to America. 5 years from now, you're going to be blowing up. You're going to be hosting the Source Awards. It's going to be crazy.
I hope so.
I don't know. Do you want to start with the sad or the good first? What do you want to do?
Start with the sad.
All right. Your coach got fired at Boston College, Al Skinner. Were you surprised?
I was surprised. I was surprised because when I was there by 4 years, he had three contract extensions, and I've only been there. This is only my third year in the NBA, and last year they went to the tournament, so I was definitely surprised.
The feedback coming out from the Boston area, that they're kind of insinuating that he wasn't working that hard. Did you believe that at all?
You know what? I kind of took it as kind of like Alvin Gentry in the sense he lets his assistant coach, actually coach. A lot of head coaches are kind of prideful or don't let their assistants, get involved. He was the opposite. He let them get involved, and they were good recruiters. And that's what I've been hearing. I heard the Boston Globe called him the laziest coach. I don't think I would take it that extreme, but he definitely had some help.
How did he affect your life over those 4 years, other than the obvious ways?
Well, he affected it, obviously. He gave me opportunity basketball-wise. I led the country in minutes, and that's kind of big. You would never expect someone like myself to do that. But, was there whenever I needed, a confidence boost, talked to me about the NBA while I was in college, kept on me academically, wanted me to better my GPA all the time, and just a good mentor.
And at what point at the BC thing did you think, I'm going to get drafted in the first round of the NBA?
I thought after my sophomore year, I made first team all Big East. I thought, every year I could get better, but I kind of jumped on the scene. We were as high as number two in the country. We were 20-0, the best a Big East team's ever done. I thought, hey, if I just keep getting better, I have a chance to be in that first round.
And even better, you got to play with the one, the only, the legendary, the immortal, the Rhino, Craig Smith.
The Rhino, Craig Smith, yeah.
I was telling you in February that he's become a cult hero at the Clipper games, and even the PA guy just says Rhino when he scores, and you were cracking up, but it caught on here.
Yeah, it's caught on. It's definitely caught on. When I first heard it, I was laughing, but hey, and nicknames can stick sometimes if they're good.
He's one of those guys. He actually reminded me of you when I was watching you. You're stuck on, not very good Charlotte teams, but I thought both of you guys just kind of belonged on a good team. He still hasn't found it yet. I think he could be a major asset on the right team, and it's just year after year he's been on crappy ones. If I was a GM, I'd trade for him. You found the right team. What was it like to go from the cellar to now? You might even get like 3 or 4 seed here in the playoffs.
Yeah, we're looking for the two right now. If we win tonight, we're tied for the 2 spots. So we're trying to move up. But for me, I knew it would be the perfect situation. I knew it would take me a while to actually get playing time because all the established players. But I belong on a winning, veteran-type team.
Yeah.
Playing with Steve Nash, he can make you look good.
I know.
So playing with him, and we have now Amari, who's been an all-star. He's taken his game to the next level. He's playing for a contract. He's playing for, next season. So I'm excited to be a part of this. It's been Svana's so much closer to team chemistry. You guys should look at the videos that Steve Nash does. You can tell that we're a close team, and I'm excited for this playoff.
And that's something Steve Kerr's been trying to do for a couple of years now. Finally accomplished it this year. You guys do have great chemistry. It's obvious. Pulling for each other on the bench, joking around, stuff like that. But it did seem like once the trade deadline passed and Amari did not get traded, he started playing better. The team took off. Looking back, did it just kind of weigh on everybody secretly?
It definitely weighed on people. It definitely weighed because for Amari, it probably weighed on him not knowing where he can go and not having any control. But his name wasn't the only one mentioned. Jason Richardson, Barbosa.
Yeah.
When you got all this stuff going on, people, you know, I mean, people, they listen to rumors. They hear from reporters. I think once we know, hey, we're going to be here, your family's going to be here, hey, let's get back to business. We made the switch for Robin Lopez in the starting lineup, and ever since then, man, we've taken way off.
How much do you guys pay attention to that stuff? Because obviously with the internet now, not just like all the different blogs and the hoopshype.com sites like that, but with Twitter, once something gets going, it immediately it can find you in 5 minutes. Do you guys, is that something that's part of your life 24/7 or once a week? How does that work?
I would say for all athletes, I would say it's part 24/7 just because the instant access, you know, if it's on Twitter, we have 7 guys on our team that have a Twitter account. So
yeah.
I don't know about it. Someone's going to relay the message. And we're a close team, so I'll talk about it. I have no problem talking with Amari. Like, hey, man, like, I hope you stay. You know, I had conversations with him before. Do I think it could have an effect? I think with Amari, it wasn't a negative effect about the trade talk, but it weighs on you. And like you said, once that trade deadline passes, you see his numbers. He's playing as good as any power forward in the NBA right now.
Do you think he's misunderstood to some degree?
You know what? How I get the perception from Amari that is he's matured so much and he's grown into basically a great teammate. I don't know how he was early on, but even a teammate say, here, hey, you know, I hang out more with Amari now than I did before. I just think coming out of high school, you know, you hear the talks about Kobe and how he acted when he came out. It's an adjustment. You're playing a man's sport at 18. He's you know, gotten used to the NBA lifestyle of the game and has definitely become a better player and teammate.
What would happen to you if you came into the NBA right out of high school? Would you be able to handle all the stuff? You know, I'm not even talking basketball, the other stuff.
Yeah, I think I would, because I have a great situation with my family, my brother. My brother lived with me at my first year. My mom's a lawyer. I had a good childhood in the sense of, you know, knowing to do what's right and what's wrong. Now, obviously, you can get caught up in other stuff, going out and having fun and spending money. That sometimes you can get caught up with, but I wouldn't be someone to let it get to me or have a big head. That's not really my style.
Right. And so you think Amari's in a good place now?
I think it's a perfect situation. I think he holds all the cards. I think Amari, like I just said, is playing the best power forward. And his team is winning. He's a huge part of that with, obviously, the rest of us. And he could opt out. So if he wants to stay here, he can. If he wants to opt out and get more money, now he has a decision. Hey, I can go to New York and go to Miami. And I think, hey, you know what, let's go as far as we can this year, and then he can worry about that in the summertime.
You know who he should talk to? Sean Marion. Because when you leave Steve Nash, you know what that means? You're not playing with Steve Nash anymore. It all sounds funny. Oh, New York or New Jersey, it all sounds great. But the bottom line, you're going to another team that doesn't have Steve Nash on it. And you're not going to be as good. I don't think.
I can agree with that. And I think we've done the studies, and every player, you know, has dropped down except for Joe Johnson.
Yeah. And, you know, you could argue when he was playing with Phoenix, he was so young, you know, he hadn't matured into the player that he was going to become had he stayed in Phoenix. You know, right now he's an all-star. Would he be like a top 6 or 7 guy in the league with Steve Nash? I don't know. Explain to the general public, like, give me like 3 Steve Nash stories for that kind of, you know, inside stuff that explains exactly what he does day to day for the team.
Well, day-to-day, the thing about Steve is not only, you know, the most well-conditioned athlete, he's one of the smartest athletes. So when I go by this, he knows he's an older guy. He knows that he's towards, you know, probably 60, in the last 4 or 5 years, he's going to be playing in the NBA. He takes care of his body as well as anyone. He gets to the gym one of the first. He does a lot of kind of balance workouts. So he's not in the weight room doing bench press and leg press. That's not him. he's someone that, hey, he's kind of like a wiry strong, so he's balancing on these med balls type. He's working on his core. He's working on doing different stretches. He's a soccer player with great ability. So before it even starts, it starts with him in the weight room, him taking care of his body. Then if you see him, all those crazy shots he shoots in the game, these one-handers around his head, the hook shot, he's in the gym shooting before anyone's there, and he practices these crazy shots.
Yeah.
And it's these shots that I haven't even seen him use yet, but I see him practicing, so I know once he gets confident in them, he'll bring them out. And his work ethic, man, I try to absorb so much knowledge from him. You know, he probably thinks I get on his nerve. I talk to him about life, about his what he does off season, during season. But he's a fan of the game. He loves it. And I think he could continue playing this well for the next 3-4 years.
And he also changed your life from a diet standpoint.
Well, definitely. Like I said, one of the smartest players. For him, he's all organic. He's when he should eat his meals, if it's after the game, when it's after, when it's before a game. People don't realize, us athletes, you know, after a game, we're done. It's probably 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Most plane rides, the food's terrible. It's pizza, it's chicken wings. So most athletes don't eat healthy when you're on the road. That's just an honest assumption, to be honest with you. Steve packs his own food from home, has like his snack bars, his protein bars. He eats salads. I mean, I've never, since I've been here, never seen him eat a bad meal. Never no fried food. Never. I haven't seen him have a dessert. And his dedication is crazy. It's crazy.
Well, I noticed when we had dinner together at Sundance, and you were looking at the dessert menu, and he kind of shot you a look like, don't you even think about it. Because you've lost, like,
exactly.
What'd you lose, 20 pounds this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm down like 15. I'm down like 15 pounds, and
jeez.
I'm trying to – I struggle with it. You know, I'm someone – I like to cheat. I get thrilled to get a little ice cream sandwich sometimes here and there.
Yeah. But, you know, it had to have changed your game because your first step looks quicker.
Yeah, I thought for me defensively for this team, I had to be one of those guys to get after the best players. I thought, you know, with Steve, I had to do a space to floor. So I worked on my conditioning and my 3-point shot to, hey, I wanted to come in here and be ready to play and be a major factor for this team. And I think I've done that so far this year.
Hardest guy to defend in the league.
You know what? We had the discussion. And you know, I don't think it's Kobe. I think for me so far this year has been Kevin Durant.
Really? My favorite guy.
Right. I've had to guard LeBron, D-Wade. I think D-Wade has the quickest first step. I think his explosive with the ball is the best, I would say, with Durant. He's 6'9", 6'10". I'm never going to block his shot. He's now getting to the free throw line. He's being more aggressive. Kobe, you know, he was more – the first time I played him, he always wanted to post up. I think he's not as good with the ball like LeBron, driving to the basket, getting free throws.
Yeah.
His explosiveness is not as what it used to be. But yet, hey, if he wants to score, he's going to get his buckets in his sweet spots. And it's easier to double him in the triangle compared to LeBron 50 feet from the air and, you know, jacking up and using his explosiveness and speed to overpower you.
Yeah, Kobe's changed his game because he got older. It's much more of a low post game, but that's actually good for you because you're good defending people in the low post. You mentioned Durant, though. The thing that amazes me about him, and this is something he had in college, and this is why I was convinced he was going to be one of the 20 best players ever. He makes his decisions. He makes his decisions a split second faster than anyone else could even process it. A lot of these scorers, they get the ball, and you can see them thinking like, all right, I'm going to do this, and this guy's going to come in. Durant just does it. He's already going, and the defense never is always like on their heels. I can't even imagine how hard it would be to defend somebody like that.
It is, and their offense is so predicated on him. Like, if you overhelp, there's so many slips for the bigs. They have Westbrook to make you pay. Jeff Green is a great compliment to him. You know, a lot of teams have good players, but it's hard to exploit. Like D-Wade. D-Wade is a great player. He could score 30, but have a bad game with the shooting percentage because you could leave a lot of guys, you know, on that team that you wouldn't mind leaving, like maybe White, maybe Chalmers. You could help off. And that team is pretty difficult because it's not a bad team. I don't want people to think it's just Durant. Durant is one of the best players in the NBA, but Westbrook could kill you. Jeff Green is good. They have Harden off the bench. Chris is a solid center. So it's just really hard to defend him.
Yeah, they played Boston on Monday night. And yeah, it was the, I watched almost all of their games, and it was the best game I thought they played this year, because the Celtics were actually trying, because they'd had a bad game on national TV against San Antonio. They were home. They needed the win. And the Durants just outplayed them. We couldn't stop them. It was frustrating. And that got me thinking, like, you know, could this team win one or two rounds in the playoffs potentially? What do you think?
I think they could win one round. I don't think they could win two. I think Denver's better than them. But Denver without Kevin Martin is different.
Right.
Obviously, you don't want to face Lakers until you have to. I mean, anyone, even though they're not playing well, you know, playoffs, seven-game series, they have the home court advantage. They're going to be the toughest out. But I can definitely see them. If they won one round, I wouldn't be surprised.
Have you guys played Portland since they got Camby?
We have. We beat them last week. We did.
Because their defense is starting to come together, although they looked like crap last night, but they were intriguing. The other team that's really coming on, and I think is a bad matchup for you guys, is Utah. I think that would be a really tough series because they're physical down low. You guys don't have Lopez right now. You know, that's the one team I'd probably want to avoid if I'm Phoenix.
Yeah, plus you don't want to play at Utah. I mean, every team is good at home, but Utah is really, really good at home, you know, and somehow, I don't know how it is, they always get calls. I know everybody gets calls, but it's different in Utah. Every player would agree with that.
The referees are afraid of the fans. We talked about this at Sundance. Nash said that the first quarter is when you feel the altitude, and then you get your second win eventually, and it's fine. But he said for him, and he said it seemed to be the consensus for whatever reason, that first quarter in Denver and Utah is when it really hits you, and then you're fine after that. You agree?
You know what? You know, Steve plays 30-plus minutes. I'm a guy I play, you know, between 19 and 24 minutes.
That's true.
You know, it's crazy. In Utah, I really can't really, you know, tell about the altitude. You know, I'm okay. I usually come at the end of the first. I go hard for about 7-8 minutes. I get my rest. I can tell from Denver, why when I get off that plane, I go to shoot around, and I can feel it in Denver. I feel it from the beginning of the game, and I might get my little second win, but I feel it in the fourth quarter of Denver. That's a huge advantage, huge.
Right. You started, obviously, at Boston College. Now you've kind of remade yourself as a bench guy. A lot of guys can't do it. Just it's not the mindset of being cold, coming out, having to immediately be good. It's just something that I almost think is a skill. What makes you good at it?
What has made me good this year is looking at Steve and Grant, how to take care of the body. Before I come in the game, if you see me, I'm stretching in between timeouts. I'm doing leg kicks. I'm getting my body warmed up before that call comes. I now know what time I'm coming into the game. So before I come in the game, I have hot packs on my knees. My mindset is, hey, who am I guarding? So when I come in, I already know what I'm supposed to be doing. And then also, to be honest with you, it's about the situation I'm in. I come in, I have Amari out there with Steve. They're not gonna leave Amari and leave me wide open. They're gonna go with Amari first, and it frees me up for a lot of wide open shots, and I make them pay because I have to be able to make those shots, along as Barbosa and Jay Rich. Because Amari down low is definitely getting a lot of attention with Steve. You know how he does, making all these crazy passes. So I know when I come in, I know where my shots are going to be at every game. I know if it's not going to be there, who I need to get the ball to. And I know defensively I have to be a dog and basically making it hell for the best player out there.
The start of the year, the fans were kind of down on the team. The media was down on the team. The consensus was that, you know, you guys didn't spend enough money the last few years. You blew your window. It was gone. And then the Amari things. Now all of a sudden you've remade yourself. You're a contender. You had all this momentum. And then the Lopez injury happens. It looks like you're going to get him back for the playoffs. It's unclear. He's at least gone for the next 2 weeks. I just thought he was super valuable for you guys. It's really hard for me to see you winning, you know, three straight playoff rounds if he's not involved. What has to happen for you guys to win without him?
The window of air shrinks if you don't have Robin Lopez. We have to shoot extremely well from the three-point range to open up space. Defensively, Jay Rich and Grant Hill rebounds per game when I have to go up three or four. So if they're averaging three rebounds, they got to average six or seven rebounds because we get so much smaller there. We, you know, Robin, he basically intimidates. You know, I mean, by intimidating, you don't really see a lot of wide open layups. He's there. He goes after stuff. He'll do a hard foul. And offensively, we don't call one play for him, but he always gets between 12 and 14 points a game. He gets offensive rebounds. When they help off Amari, Steve's throwing him lobs, and he takes up space. So with not with him not there, Channing has to play extremely well. I have to shoot the ball at a high rate. Barbosa has to come in, and we got to speed this game up. But defensively, you got to rebound the ball extremely well.
So you're going to play some more four now, right?
You know what? I haven't yet. You know, but we haven't been in trouble. But to be honest with you, we've been playing the likes of like New Jersey and Minnesota, so we haven't had a tough test. You know, we got Detroit here, which we should win. These are the games that you should win, but you never know. It's the NBA, so hopefully we can come out. Our real test will be when we play the Spurs next week, or maybe Milwaukee tomorrow, with the big front line rebounding. You know, now you got Tim Duncan. Robin Lopez will guard him. Now we're going to have maybe Jaren Collins, so more doubles. So now you're opening yourself up to more three balls and more penetration.
I sat courtside last month when you guys played the Clippers, and I couldn't believe how big Lopez was. I had never seen him in person. For some reason, I never saw him last year. And he lists himself as 6'11", but I think that's BS. He seemed like 7'1 to me. And he's gigantic, and he's big, and it just was he's a real center. I was surprised. And as you said, you know, you guys are playing great. You're gritting out these tough wins. I think it's a shame. I was starting to talk myself into you guys making the finals, the way the Lakers are playing. Do you think he comes back?
You know what? I think it's 50-50. I think if you ask me right now, I would say no. But you know what? I'm not with him right now. He's back in Phoenix. He has obviously serious injury if he's not coming on the road trip. You know, we're on a week-long road trip, so Scott, you got to take it serious. They're saying give it 2 weeks and then do an evaluation. So obviously it's taking 2 weeks to heal, so what we got to have the mindset he's not going to be here. If he comes back, hey, now, hey, let's go. You know, if he comes back, then we look at us. Our chances right there besides the Lakers, you know, as a clear-cut favorite. We're just as good as Denver. We're just as good as Dallas. But yeah, we're gonna need him back to make that big run we want to.
I have an idea. So the Nets season is almost over. You get a wig, you put it on Brook Lopez, and you make believe Robin came back, but it's really Brook, and then you pay Brook like, you know, $50 under the table.
Yeah. No, come on, Brook. Those two guys sound so alike. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Those guys are legitimate goofballs, right?
Legitimate, out there, the whole Stanford weird. I like to have fun, artistic type of guys.
Give me your favorite Lopez brothers story.
I gotta give you Robin Lopez. Robin Lopez, he wasn't playing. It's not Robin. Yeah, Robin. He wasn't playing that much early on. Shaq was here. Shaq and him battled in practice.
Yeah.
And we were playing Portland. We were down by 20 or 30. You know how it is on the road. Shaq, they pick up the starters. So now, basically, Robin is going against Greg Oden. Greg Oden, which never really posted up, especially last season. They threw him the ball to Greg Oden, and he dunked. He got an and-one on Robin. Coming to timeout, we call a timeout. Shaq gets mad at Robin, you know, says a couple curse words. Hey, come on, pick it up, man. And then Robin goes off on Shaq like, hey, if you guys wouldn't get beat by 30, I wouldn't have to clean up your mess.
Wow.
and from then on, we've seen a different Robin Lopez. We've seen a guy that's been a tough guy in practice. Since then, he hasn't taken anything from anyone else. And as you see, we knew he was going to be this good. And that's why we need him back.
That's great. What did you think of your Shaq experience?
I loved it. I thought as a person, top of the line, I thought that we all didn't mesh well. I think with Amari and him and Steve, the kind of way we're trying to play. And I thought Shaq, especially when Steve went out, Shaq stepped up and played well offensively. He was healthy. He never complained in the sense of like he needed the ball more. But he wants to win. And I thought when we were winning, he was good. When we were losing, he got frustrated sometimes, but I mean, I would love to be his teammate anytime.
Did he ever talk about Kobe?
You know what? He never did talk. I mean, he never had a problem with Kobe, to be honest with you. I mean, I asked him and his security guards, he goes with him everywhere he goes, about the whole Kobe story. They had fun. They think, you know, Phil kind of, you know, filled that fire a little bit. Phil was trying to hype it up, which, hey, Phil was trying to win a championship and trying to get these two superstars to play. And, hey, they won titles. I think it was unfortunate him leaving L.A. I think if you had asked him again, he wish he would have done things different and would have stayed.
Right. The other question I had, speaking of Shaq and NBA legends, you played for a team run by Michael Jordan. That was your rookie experience. Do you have a Michael Jordan gambling story?
Michael Jordan story I have. after my last season, after my rookie season, we met with a head coach, and then you met with the owner and Michael Jordan. So I'm talking to Michael. He's saying, hey, Jared, I want you to work on this season. We like you. We're going to have a bigger role for you next season. You play well the rookie year. We want you to do this. I said, hey, I'll do that. And when I'm walking out, I said, hey, Mike. I said, hey, I heard you had this camp in Vegas in the summertime for, you know, the old people. And he was like, yeah, I got that. I said, hey, I work out in Vegas. Hey, hit me up one time. I would love to go out with you. He started laughing. I said, I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
Fast forward 4 months ago, I smoked 11 o'clock at night. I get a phone call from a 312 number. It's Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan calls me up and said, hey, what you doing? I said, man, I'm in the bed. He said, meet me at this spot in Vegas. Met him there. Let's just say I had a great night with the boss.
Wow. I mean, that's a legendary story. You gamble with Michael. That's like going behind the curtain. I can't even imagine. Hey, I'd probably freeze.
It was crazy because I went up to him when I saw him. I met him up. I went up to him and like security came out of the woodwork. There was no security around him. When I wanted to get my handshake, like four or five security guards came out of the woodworks. It was crazy.
Is he somebody that you idolized growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I think every athlete did. I think he was the face, man. And actually have sit-down conversations with him, to be drafted by him. I even saw him. I went to his party he had All-Star Weekend, and he came up to me and said, hey, man, you're playing real well. I'm happy for you. And I said, hey, you know, in a couple of years, I might sign with Brand Jordan. Let me know. So I'm always working to the next thing.
Did you get the feeling from him when you were around him in Charlotte that he would have come back in a heartbeat if he could have to play?
Yes. If Michael could still play, he'd be playing. I think Michael's afraid of injury. I think he didn't want to pop his Achilles. I thought he was getting old. If Michael could play, especially at a level that just somewhat an all-star, he don't got to be one of the best players in the NBA. If he knew that he was an all-star, still one of the top 10 to 12 players, he would definitely be playing.
You played with Adam Morrison, who, you know, I guess could be labeled a draft bust now because he's not playing, but he did blow out his knee. Do you think he would have made it had he not blown out the knee, or was it just a case where he just wasn't a good fit for the league?
I think that, you know, he definitely can make it. I mean, I think he wasn't going to be the all-star players that people thought he was going to be. They had him as the next Larry Bird. I thought that he could be a solid player. I thought he's definitely a good shooter. And with him, his rookie year, he was confident. I know he didn't shoot a high percentage, but he definitely played a lot more confident. He was playing like 28 minutes. He's better than what he is right now in L.A., but he's not going to be that player that the media hyped him up to be coming out.
Were you guys in the same draft?
We're not. I was after him, the year after.
That's right. That's right. Okay. He did. He made second all-rookie team or whatever as a rookie.
Right.
He wasn't like a disaster as a rookie, but then he blew out his knee, and it just seemed like that was it. You know, now he's
a tough
man.
It was tough.
Is there anybody that you've played with that you feel like should have had a better career than they have?
I should have had a better career. Man, I think it was only my third year in the NBA. So teammates I had was on Charlotte. So all of them are still now going like Gerald Wallace wasn't an all-star when I was there.
Yeah,
and now he's all-star. He's gotten better. You know, he's gotten better. And I see it all starts with coaching. And people understand it's about coaching and putting yourself in the right system.
Yeah.
I would not be the same player I am right now. I think I've hit over 100 threes and whatever I've done in Charlotte. Is it because I'm better? I'm not better now. What it is the system I'm in. I'm in with the point guard who's better. I'm in with a power forward who's better. But now the situation I'm in now is I'm open more. I know my role. I'm not coming out if I make one mistake. Mm. I'm in a situation that I'm with a coach that lets us play. And I've responded to that. And now people say, dang, Jared, you got a lot better. Yeah, I mean, I improved my jump shot a little bit, but I was this player in Charlotte. You know what I'm saying? I was the same player. Just, hey, certain systems, certain people shine.
Yeah. This has been the year of NBA players mailing naked photos of themselves to women and then having them land on the internet. Is this something that you guys now joke about and talk about in the locker rooms and stuff? You're aware of all this stuff that's happening, right?
Oh, I'm totally aware of it. I mean, you're aware of anything in something like, especially that. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I think for one, obviously, you know, it's a little crazy in the sense of how it's getting leaked out. Obviously, you're seeing these pictures of girls or a girl you're talking to, and she's either leaking it or giving it to someone to leak. So you got to watch out who you're dating, who you're talking to. And then for two is, why are you sending a butt-naked picture? You know what I mean?
You got to watch out for this.
And with Twitter and this day and age with social media and everything that's going on, you saw the Tiger, and now seeing with Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
Man, you mess up one time, it'd be all over you. If it happened, you saw with Kobe early on, man, you see Ben Roethlisberger. That's why you got to have your eyes out, and you got to have the right crew around you. And with these pictures, man, especially Greg Oden, I was laughing the first time I heard that.
Yeah. You seem like you came from a normal family of your head on straight. Is it hard to meet normal women being an NBA player? Because it seems like it's a certain type of woman that's waiting for you at every hotel or every bar, every restaurant, and that maybe it's kind of hard to weed out the ones that are actually just normal that you'd meet normally.
Yeah, I would say not just for basketball, but I would say for successful men in general, depending on what your job is. But, like, it's hard in the sense of, because what does an athlete do? Athlete, you play basketball, and then when you're not playing basketball, you're either at a club, at a restaurant, or spending time with family. And if you don't have family, you're with your friends, right?
Yeah.
You're traveling. So when you meet these girls, you're either in a club, maybe through a friend. So, yeah, I mean, you're not going to meet your wife in Vegas. You're going to meet your wife in a Miami or a strip club. Let's be honest. So usually it's hopefully you meet them through a friend. Hopefully you're meeting, you know, at a place that, hey, you know, these women could be quality and get to know a little better.
So basically Nash needs to hook you up with one of his Paraguayan wife's friends. That sounds
right.
Somebody with their head on straight, maybe a model or something. Yeah, I think what people don't realize about NBA players, and I'm not saying that, you know, I know a ton of them, but it's kind of a weird life. You know, you guys are flying from city to city. You're flying charters. You're going right to the hotel. You spend more time in the hotel than I think people realize. You got your shoot around. And then if you want to go out, it's pretty hard to hide when a 6'9" guy is in a club. You're going to stand out wherever you go.
Wherever you go.
And I don't know. I think it would be weird. Like even something like going to the movies or something like that, you're going to stand out. You get 6'6" guys sitting in a movie theater. It seems like you deal with it pretty well. Do other guys not deal with it as well?
Do who?
Do other guys not deal with it as well?
You know what? Like, I think, you know, it depends on your personality. On this team, I think everyone does it well. But if you would ask Steve, hey, is Steve going to go out to a certain situation that I would? I mean, obviously, he has a more recognizable face. I can go anywhere. And I'm like, hey, Jared, great game, autograph. Steve, it might flock to him more. Hey, it might be more of a circus. So you got to know what you're doing. But, yeah, I mean, I think people have a misconception of what NBA, we're at hotels. We love our life, and there's no, we're not complaining about it. I mean, I love to do what I do, get paid great money, eat at great restaurants, and then I got 6 months free in the summertime.
Yeah.
But during the season, yeah, you're in hotels. You might have a day off here and there in the city. And when you go out, you go to a club or, you know, you go to a restaurant and people could be bothering you. But, hey, for us to get paid this amount of money, it's nothing for us to give an autograph. It's nothing for us just to wave, be polite, and keep it moving. And that's the least we can do, especially for the kids. You got to do that. You know, I'll sign any autograph unless I'm in the restroom or something. You know, it's not that big of a deal.
How many guys bring laptops on the road on the team?
I used to, but you know what? With this team, it's so close. I would say maybe two or three people, and that's just to watch movies on the plane. Besides that, we're either out at restaurants, or unless it's a back-to-back, we're either watching TV and getting room service. But if we have a day off, like New York we did, we're all hanging out.
All right, so what do we need to do to make you more multimedia? I really think the playoffs could be your breakout. We got to do something.
You know, NBA, you follow on their Twitter, put me the new Ocho Cinco of the NBA. So I'm coming up. I think playoffs is big for me. And then after playoffs, I want to interview people on the red carpet for the ESPYs.
Yes, we're going to work on that.
Perfect. I wouldn't mind being like when it's all said and done, like kind of like Jalen Rose was for the Best Damn Sports Show.
Oh.
Remember that?
Look at you. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I could see myself. Yeah, but right now, basketball's number one, you know, so I'm working on, hey, getting that two spot. And then after that, hey, we keep moving, And if we're winning, I could do podcasts with Bill Simmons. I could be on Slam Magazine with maybe Amari Stoudemire.
Yeah.
When you win, a lot more stuff comes with it.
You mentioned the ESPYs. I think if you're going to go that Ocho Cinco route, I think you need to work on the nickname. Right now, do you officially have a nickname?
You know what? It's so funny you mentioned it. Amari said, hey, we need to give Dud a nickname. So right now, I don't have technically a nickname. In the summertime, Chauncey Billups, Tayshaun, and Damon Jones would call me Twitter Man because I was getting into my Twitter. And that was
Twitter Man.
But now, yeah.
I like
that's
that.
Not good enough. That's not... You like that?
Twitter Man's not bad. I mean, it's better than nothing. But it seems like it should be something that has Dud in it.
Yeah.
Because that's what the guys call you, right? Or do they call you? What do they call you?
You know, they call me JD Dudley. You know,
JD's kind of generic.
Kinda rapper.
You know what? Because people will hear this, maybe they'll email me some suggestions for some Jared Dudley nicknames. What is it? You have a Z on the Twitter. Some people call you, what do they call you, JMZ?
JMZ, because I did a little spinoff of TMZ and basically did it through basketball. So JMZ is branded as an exclusive network for basketball. So when you look at my videos, it's in the locker room, on the bus, hotel plane rides. And what you see with my videos, no other athlete could say they do what I do, even Ocho Cinco. Because I'm giving you videos of actually what's going on. It's like, you know, if it's in the locker room, you're seeing Steve Nash get dressed or Amari talk about his dunks or Jay Rich on how he hit the game winner against Oklahoma City. It's right there. It's basically a reality TV show, the Phoenix Suns. That's basically what it is.
Well, you just gave us the nickname. I don't know why we didn't come up with it sooner. JMZ is a great nickname. I love
that.
Yeah, because it's a playoff of TMZ. It's fun to say. There we go, JMZ. Now you got to do JMZ TV.
I think
that even might be its own sub nickname of the nickname. So how do we find these videos?
You go to Jared Dudley 619. That's my Twitter. The only thing I do is every so often, I would say at least once a week, I'm doing a video. It depends on how many games we have. Early in the season, I did Twitter Cribs, where I went to athletes' house like Barbosa, Jason Richardson, and you get to see their homes. And it's kind of like the MTV Twitter Cribs. I got one coming out with Robin Lopez. Right now, drives a 1987 Corolla.
Is that true?
It's true. A green Corolla, right? So I told him whenever he buys his next car, we're gonna do Pit My Ride. Twit Pit My Ride. So it's kind of like a Twitter, and we're gonna have me, Steve, and Grant Hill in the suits. Breaking down his car and trying to make a new car for him whenever he buys his new car, which will probably be in the next month or so.
I love that. When I worked for Jimmy Kimmel's show in 2003, we did this bit where we had Quentin Richardson go into the players' parking lot and break down every guy's car. And it was phenomenal. It's on YouTube. It was like 5 minutes. Marco Yark was driving like some $300,000 sports car or whatever, but it was really funny. I would watch a show where athletes just showed off their teammates' cars and made fun of them. That should just be a show. That should be on once a week. I would watch that.
Man, I'm telling you, some of these athletes, you wouldn't expect some of the cars they have. Like Jerome James, who plays for the Bulls. I mean, he doesn't play, but he's on the team. I mean, he had a Phantom, a convertible Phantom. I was like, man, whose car is that for the Bulls? And we were all discussing whose car that was, and we thought maybe Joakim Noah, but he hasn't had his second contract.
Right.
Jerome James.
Wow. Who has the best car in the Suns?
I think it's tied, I think, between Amari's Maybach and a Lamborghini with Jay Rich's Lamborghini, a convertible Lamborghini.
That's excellent. Did you see what P. Diddy gave his 16-year-old son for his 16th birthday?
What was it? Rolls Royce or a Phantom? What was it?
He gave him a Maybach, but also a driver. So he had the Maybach and he had his own personal driver. That was my favorite part of the gift, that he threw the driver in. Wasn't enough to just give him a $450,000 car. You need a driver too, so you don't get to drive this guy.
Here's a human being to go with it.
here's a live person that gets to be with you all the time. All right, Jared Dudley, JMZ, come back on the playoffs. See, well, let's see how this works. Because if I jinxed you, something horrible is going to happen to the Suns of next week. I hope that doesn't happen. So I'm calling out the jinx now to reverse jinx it. If nothing happens and this proceeds as planned and it all goes good, come back for the playoffs, would you?
Yeah. All right. I'll come back and chop it up with you guys. I'm down with ESPN and Bill Simmons, so I'll come back anytime.
All right, so Twitter, JaredDudley619. Check out his videos. Watch him on the Phoenix Suns. Watch him play power forward against the San Antonio Spurs next week. Thanks for coming on the BS Report.
Anytime.
Target the center. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.